These are some excerpts from a letter that Rilke wrote to a young poet dated May 14th, 1904. You should not let yourself be confused in your solitude by the fact that there is something in you that wants to break out of it. This very wish will help you if you use it quietly and deliberately and like a tool to spread out your solitude over wide country. People have oriented all their solutions towards the easy and towards the easiest side of the easy. But it is clear that we must hold to what is difficult. Everything alive holds to it. Everything in nature grows and defends itself in its own way and is characteristically and spontaneously itself, seeking at all costs to be so and against all opposition. We know little, but that we must hold to what is difficult is a certainty that will not forsake us. It is good to be solitary, for solitude is difficult. To love is good too, love being difficult. For one human being to love another, that is perhaps the most difficult of all our tasks, the ultimate, the last test and proof. The work for which all other work is but preparation. For this reason, young people, who are beginners in everything, cannot yet know love. They have to learn it. With their whole being, with all their forces gathered close about their lonely, timid, upward-beating heart, they must learn to love. But learning time is always a long, secluded time. And so loving for a long while ahead and far on into life is solitude, intensified and deepened loneliness for him who loves. Love is at first not anything that means merging, giving over, and uniting with another. For what would a union be of something unclarified and unfinished, still subordinate? It is a high inducement to the individual to ripen, to become something in himself, to become world for himself for another's sake. It is a great exacting claim upon him, something that chooses him out and calls him to vast things. Only in this sense, as a task of working at themselves, might young people use the love that is given them. Merging and surrendering and every kind of communion is not for them, who must save and gather for a long, long time still. But young people err so often and so grievously in this, that they, in whose nature it lies to have no patience, fling themselves at each other. When love takes possession of them, scatter themselves just as they are, in all their untidiness, disorder, confusion, and then what? What is life to do to this heap of half-battered existence which they call their communion and which they would gladly call their happiness if it were possible? Thus, each loses himself for the sake of the other, and loses the other, and many others that wanted still to come. And loses the expanses and the possibilities, exchanges the approach and flight of gentle divining things for an unfruitful perplexity out of which nothing can come anymore, nothing save a little disgust, disillusionment, and poverty. And rescue, in one of the many conventions that have been put up in great number, like public refuges along this most dangerous road, no realm of human experience is so well provided with conventions as this. It is true that many young people who love wrongly, that is simply with abandoned and unsolitary, feel the oppressiveness of a failure and want to make the situation in which they have landed viable and fruitful in their own personal way. for their nature tells them that less even than all else that is important can questions of love be solved publicly and according to this or that agreement. That they are questions, intimate questions, from one human being to another, which in any case demand a new, special, only personal answer. But how should they, who have already flung themselves together and no longer mark off and distinguish themselves from each other, who therefore no longer possess anything of their own selves, be able to find a way out of themselves, out of the depth of their already shattered solitude? They act out of common helplessness. And then if, with the best intentions, they try to avoid the convention that occurs to them, say marriage, they land in the tentacles of some less loud but equally deadly conventional solution. For then everything far around them is convention. Where people act out of a prematurely fused, turbid communion, every move is convention. Every relation to which such entanglement leads has its convention, be it ever so unusual. Why even separation would here be a conventional step, an impersonal chance decision without strength and without fruit. The demands which the difficult work of love makes upon our development are more than life size, and as beginners, we are not up to them. But if we nevertheless hold out and take this love upon us as burden and apprenticeship, instead of losing ourselves in all the light and frivolous play behind which people have hidden from the most earnestness of their existence, then a little progress and an alleviation will perhaps be perceptible to those who come long after us. Someday, there will be girls and women whose name will no longer signify merely an opposite of the masculine, but something in itself. Something that makes one think not of any complement and limit, but only of life and existence, the feminine human being. This advance will change the love experience, which is now full of error, will alter it from the ground up, reshape it into a relation that is meant to be of human being to another, no longer of man to woman. And this more human love that will fulfill itself infinitely considerate and gentle and kind and clear in binding and releasing will resemble that which we are preparing with struggle and toil. The love that consists in this, that two solitudes protect and border and salute each other.